This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you to attend the Columbia Home Tour this Sunday, June 3rd, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tickets are $20 each in advance and $25 the day of the event. For more information on the event and the featured homes, call 410-730-3987 or visit the CA website at columbiaassociation.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Alice Giles, the co-president, not just the president, the co-president of the League of Women Voters of Howard County. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, I think Dave hit the nail on the head. It's a black coffee show.
It's a black coffee show. You know, I was your guest last night. Thank you very much.
Very welcome.
For the Zac Brown Band at Meriwether Post Pavilion.
Had a great time.
And, yeah, it was Meriwether rocks. And last night was one of those moments. The weather was perfect.
It was an awesome night.
It was awesome. The crowd was awesome. I mean, it was awesome.
But for today's show, if there are any lulls in conversation, you'll know it was Dennis's turn to talk, and he forgot.
This is coffee cup number 4. And, you know, usually I put a little decaf in there. Not today. Not today. But, you know, speaking of Meriwether, Meriwether has also played host to several graduations.
Last of which was 2 nights ago.
Yeah. Was it Marriott's Ridge?
I think Marriott's Ridge was the last.
The Mustangs were the last to matriculate.
They were.
And so congratulations to all those kids and to the parents, you know, who has ushered their children through the first 12 years of primary education.
Don't let the door hit you in the butt. Way out, right?
Now what? Well, you know, many of them will be off to Howard Community College. I'd be remiss if I did not say Howard Community College had the largest graduating class ever.
Yeah.
Ever. So, you know, a lot of these recent high school graduates are going to end up at HCC next year, and good luck to them. But, you know, it's kind of a sad thing that happens this time of year, is a lot of our recent grads head down to the ocean. Let off a little steam, we'll have a little fun, and this happens every year. And this year, it hit close to home. There was a fatality. Matthew Cheswick, Glenel alum from 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
A couple years ago, hit and killed by drunk driver.
He was a drunk driver. Actually, hit and run. He hit him and then took off. Yeah. And some witnesses, I think, followed him before the cops tracked him down.
No, it's just a shame. You know, it wasn't late. Was it early morning or was it? Well, it doesn't really matter.
It's like 1:30 in the morning,
yeah,
I think. Yeah.
Well,
what's ironic about this story? The mom had spoken, I guess, to the reporters, and apparently her son had spoken with her and had just told her that he is going to be walking from the Delaware line down to where he was staying, which was like 50 or 60th Street, because his friends were all drunk and he didn't want to get in the car with anybody. So really just kind of an ironic tragedy.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's awful.
Really, really sad.
That's awful.
So the graduating class this year will be the last graduating class that has to do so under the purview of Alan Dyer being a member of the Board of Education. We do think he's actually finally on his way out, but he's not going to do it quietly.
No, you didn't expect he would.
So Alan Dyer has once again filed a complaint in Circuit Court for Howard County.
Open meetings issue again.
Another open meetings issue. And, you know, as we talked about over lunch, I think he's a pain in the rear for a lot of people. I think he likes to make noise. I think he's self-righteous. I think he's got a huge ego.
It's a lot about Alan.
All about Alan. With that said, you know, and again, I'm basing this on the report about the complaint itself, but it does suggest that there were some meeting minutes that were approved that didn't have a date, a time, a location, who was present, what was discussed, and it was approved by several board members. So to the extent that that's true, you know what? Yeah, we need to follow the rules. And if the Board of Education put a committee in place to do certain things and they've got a committee report or minutes from that committee, they need to make sure that those minutes properly reflect for the benefit of the rest of the Board of Education what's going on.
You know, so maybe there, you know, he has, if anything, if they get better at their reporting and that improves, then that would be. Somebody just walked by with the camera. Paul was doing the look, and I was like,
Well, you were convinced they were here for you. I know.
But you know what I'm curious about? I mean, assuming that this whole impeachment thing kind of gets dismissed, because it kind of looks like that's the way that's heading.
Right.
He's got, what, another 4 or 5 months to serve on the board? We haven't heard of the last of it.
Oh no, he'll find a new venue in which to wreak havoc.
No, but I mean, so with the last, he'll file another suit before all said and done. And speaking of school board, they passed their budget the other night, and there was
an abstentia.
you know, there wasn't much said about it in the paper, but Brian Meshkin wasn't there for.
How is it he always misses these important meetings?
The budget vote? He couldn't call in for that?
Well, you're not allowed to call in.
Well, yes. Well, he's trying to make an issue out of that, but $703 million budget. That's a lot of money.
You know, our guest today's mother is on the Board of Education, but I think I'm going to spare her of twisting her arm into telling us what really went down.
Well, you know, we have to be careful because there's a certain candidate for the board this year that likes to that is kind of watching very closely what our guest says outside of League of Women Voters things, because she thinks she should probably you're supposed to recuse yourself for the year, aren't you?
I really have no comment about that.
No comment. See, that's
on the record. There you have it, folks.
I'm telling you, that's the way that's going.
And I know nothing about the budget beyond what's been reported.
I thought you had no comment.
I have no comment about the second issue. As to the budget, I just know no more than what I've read.
But, you know, I mean, there's a lot. There's $10 million more than last year. Teacher pensions, which is, you know, the state is starting to put about, part of our great budget.
And that's really the $10 million, because this year's piece is about $9.8 million. That's going to go up significantly in the next 4 years.
Yeah, but we got a new elementary school. I know they're at least doing a new elementary school. They got a middle school.
New middle school in Elkridge.
Yeah. So they got $77 million for those. So I know the folks in Elkridge will be happy about that, because there is an overcrowding problem in Elkridge.
And, of course, the Board of Ed passed their budget because the county passed
theirs.
Once the county passed their budget, the Board of Ed could proceed because it knew what it was going to have.
But they didn't have their lovely kumbaya unanimous vote.
Well, you know, for 6 years, there's been a 4-1 partisan vote for approval of our budget. Greg Fox, most recently, obviously being the one who's voted against the budget. And I know this year they really set out to have a unanimous budget, and that didn't work because of some 11th-hour amendments that were proposed by County Councilman Fox.
Yeah, the Republican, our lone Republican.
Pertaining to the increase in the fire tax.
Yeah, you know, and I think kudos to Greg. First of all, he wasn't saying. A lot of people think that the Grover Norquist world of Republicans and tax, you know, no tax increase pledges. Greg wasn't saying no tax increase.
No, I think he recognized why we needed to come up with a flat tax across the county.
Yeah, and I think that's
equal tax across the county.
You know, Tom Colpoint on his blog, he was being reasonable, and I think that, you know, even though the vote was unanimous, it's not like we have one Republican member of the council saying, any tax increase I vote against. No, that wasn't it. He actually tried to find a compromise and a middle ground, and I think that probably didn't get any credit for that.
Probably not, and I think a lot of it had to do with the reserve that the fire department was looking to have, and Greg felt that $500,000 was adequate.
Right.
And the remainder of the council felt that they needed $15 million, which is a lot of money, and what it was really saying was, we're going to take money from the taxpayers, not because we need it, but because we want to build a reserve in case we do.
So. But I may not be clear on this, but I understand, or I thought I heard, that some of that contingency had been used before to make up for the shortfall when we didn't have enough, when the fire tax fell short. So it may have been depleted and needs to be built up. I don't know, but you're right. $15 million sounds like a big contingency.
Now, I know one single truck wouldn't be covered by that
$500,000.
I don't know, but I know it's more than $500,000.
And you know what? We did want to get the fire chief. Come on, so maybe we'll talk about that a little more if we get him on the show.
Term limits. Yeah, so there's one of those laws, folks.
We have term limits. First of all, there was a confusing. This is Calvin Ball's initiative,
He's looking to right now. The county council's term limits are for 12 years. It's three four-year terms.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's looking to increase that for a fourth term.
Yeah, fourth. Some people may say it's a little self-serving for Calvin, a little unusual.
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting political paradigm this year because everyone's sort of wondering who's going to run for what.
I know.
And, you know, increasing the term limits from 3 to 4 create sort of a parking lot for a number of folks that may want to sit by and say, okay, maybe I'm not going to run this year because I don't have as good a chance of getting elected for a particular position. Yeah. But it gives them a place to hang out, continue serving the community, continue serving their constituents, but not really losing name recognition and that political gain.
Yeah, and my thing about this was, you know, the flyer came out kind of in support of Calvin, but with a left-handed support thing. I mean, they said, they kind of made fun of him for going for this, but then they said, well, we're really against term limits altogether.
Because they deprive voters of the power that should be theirs. What do you think of that?
That's actually the League stance as well. We're against term limits for any office.
Because let the people speak.
Exactly. We believe the best term limit is the will of the voter. So I haven't had a chance to talk over with my board yet.
The will of the voter.
But I'd expect we'd probably end up supporting this as the first step into the eventual elimination of term limits. We'd probably say we like this as a way forward, but it doesn't go far enough.
I don't want to go too far adrift before we finish our news, but
yeah.
It's kind of a follow-up. So whether you look at local politics or state or even federal, where you have these senators or congressmen that are serving 20, 30, 40 years, and let's face it, they get elected because of name recognition. And there's lots of stats out there about the fact that people really don't vote for a person because they know what they stand for. They vote for them because they're either at the top of the ballot or because of name recognition.
Yeah. Right.
So isn't it really a self-perpetuating problem, though, if you allow people to be in office for a long period of time?
Well, I think
the advantage of incumbency.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually interesting you bring up the federal. As I just mentioned, I went to school in West Virginia, and one of our senators there was Robert Byrd. The only way in which West Virginia had any real power was just the length of Byrd's term.
Yeah, he bought so many dollars into
exactly.
West Virginia. Yeah.
It wasn't that he had name recognition. It wasn't that they didn't know what he stood for. It was the idea that as long as he was the longest-serving senator, West Virginia had a sense of power in getting money, in getting bills.
True enough. It worked very well for West Virginia.
So there's a way in which sometimes the lack of term limits can help smaller states build up a real lion in the Senate and build up someone who can really work for them in a way that another senator couldn't. And I think things like that, institutional memory, things like that aren't bad. But as long as that kind of weight is given, then there really is an advantage to keeping the same person in office.
That's a good point.
And to be fair to Calvin, I mean, he did say in Lindsay McPherson's article in Explore Howard, he said that the vast majority of Maryland jurisdictions have no term limits. So it would kind of align us with the rest of them. So, you know, this is one of those things. Gets people fired up. It gets the real political, loco political junkies.
Because it's like you said, is it a self-serving, why is he doing it? It's one of those ones where you really get to look at motivation, and people like talking about motivation more than anything else.
A lot of people do things.
And I'll admit I'm a little ignorant on the topic, and I'm not exactly sure. I haven't heard the basis for the increase, and I'd like to understand that a little bit more. But on its face, without an understanding of why we need a fourth term, it does look a little self-serving, which is really, frankly, very atypical for Calvin.
Yeah, there's not very, very atypical for him.
The last person I'd expect to hear something like that from.
Maybe we'll get him to come on for a quick 2 minutes on the next one and talk about this.
You know, yeah, that'd be great.
You know, another thing we're kind of celebrating this month. I'm sorry, are you done with it, or are we still talking about?
Well, I was, but I was going to move on to my next story.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
Faux pas number two for Dennis. We're going to keep track.
I'm telling you, man. I need more coffee.
It's all good. So, moving from Columbia, which is the topic of a lot of our stories, to Ellicott City, soft stuff.
Yeah.
A place I used to go on dates.
You took dates
back
to soft stuff?
Back when they first opened. Yeah. Well, it was all I could afford. But yeah, I used to hang out there a lot.
Good ice cream.
Soft stuff right on Route 40, right next to the Forest Diner. That whole area is being completely redeveloped
by
Waverly Real Estate Group, led by Don Ruhr and a number of other developers in town. And soft stuff in its current configuration is going away.
But they'll be open all summer, correct?
They're going to stay open all summer. They're going to demolish this fall and hopefully be back up next spring. But very differently. They're going to actually have a sit-down ice cream parlor type feel. They're going to expand their menu, have bathrooms and indoor seating and things like that.
Kind of takes away some of the cachet.
It really does. I love that place.
And right next door, of course, the other big story is the Forest Diner.
Closed day before yesterday.
Yeah, 66 years.
Isn't that unbelievable? There were people that went there every year for 30 years, 7 days a week.
You know, it's really cool, too. I'm a fan of the old diner cars. And there is an original underneath. They kind of built a facade around it. But if you strip off some of that stuff they've added onto it, there's still the old original diner car. That these things were bought in on trucks, all ready to go to open up a restaurant. I mean, a lot of the diner cars were sold actually with utensils already in place. I mean, there. So the word is, Courtney Watson, Councilman Courtney Watson, has told me that there's an effort to try to get that dining car relocated to the Clark's Ellie Oak Farm, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Of course, the Chanet Forest bits and pieces are there as well, which happens to be right across the street from the Forest Diner. But I have this vision of Clark Ellie Oak Farm sort of becoming this breeding ground for all that is sacred in Howard County. You know, so I can see little bits and pieces of Columbia Town Center as it's, you know, I'm just going to say bits and pieces of the Rouse Building.
Yeah. You know, the people tree.
I mean, I think we ought to really talk to the Clark family and just see if we can make that the breeding ground for all that is sacred.
It'd be kind of like our own museum of industry, you know, of Howard County.
Can you imagine all the people in Howard County and what they would think should be there? I mean, how would we capture Rouse's vision and put it at Clark Ellie Oak Farm? How would we do that?
It's basically the world's largest time capsule.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, or Howard County's largest.
Well put. Now, Dennis, you may be.
Now, I've got, you know, I apologize for that. I know we laid these up, but I've... I don't know. I'm not up to my game today. I'm about a court.
Quite all right. I've had my days.
We're celebrating, though. It's a happy birthday to Johns Hopkins APL. Second largest employer in the county is celebrating 70 years. That's pretty awesome. It's a pretty awesome place, actually. You know,
it's an amazing place, and some of the work they do. Actually, I had occasion this morning to volunteer at my kids, my daughter's middle school, where they launched rockets. And one of the other dads that was there, also volunteering, works at APL, and he analyzes data that comes from rockets and trajectories and things like that. So, you know, fascinating work. Wow. And such a feather in Howard County's cap.
Well, you know, in this article by Janine Holzberg in The Sun, she writes that since 2000, APL has released approximately 1,700 new technologies, resulting in the creation of 289 companies nationwide. I don't think we've tapped into what an economic generator APL could be for this county for new companies. I mean, I say it's being done. We have a lot of companies that start from people who've left the labs and have started companies here. But it seems to me there's a lot more there. If we're starting 289 companies around the country.
Well, tech transfer is really an amazing concept and isn't utilized, as you pointed out, to the extent that I think it could be.
Right.
And better relationships between education institutions and research institutions and the private sector, I think, would go a long way to help this economy.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, it, as I said, a lot of good people. A former county executive, actually, Courtney Watson's dad was...
Ed Cochran.
Yeah. He worked at the labs, too, so... A lot of people have come out of there. A lot of people still, your neighbors still work there. But it's a quiet company because it's a nonprofit research place, and they do a lot. They're an important component of what goes on at Fort Meade too. What they're doing over there. So kudos to all the folks who work over there, and happy birthday. Still me?
It's still you, because you want to talk about the colliding Milky Ways.
Well, I want to know what the labs are doing. Yes, I want to know what the labs are going to do about this. I picked this up in The Sun also this morning by Matthew Hay Brown. Yeah, they're making fun of me over here. There's the bad news is that the Andromeda Galaxy is headed towards the Earth at 250,000 miles an hour. A collision course is imminent. Well,
holy crap.
Yeah, and there's another galaxy that is in danger of actually colliding with Andromeda, with the Earth, like, in the middle.
Now, are we talking about this?
And when is this happening?
Well, you know, it's a good thing you asked that, because it could be as soon as 4 billion years from now.
Now, when this happens, is it estimated by the scientists at APL that it's actually going to come right to Howard County, which is why we're talking about this?
Yeah, we're the epicenter.
We're the epicenter of everything, don't you? Yeah, just ask Ken Allman. I mean, we're where everything happens. But yeah, I figure that it's probably somebody at the labs is looking at this. That's the kind of things they do over there.
I think we do a follow up on that story in a few million years.
Are we the number one place for a new galaxy to hit?
I think so. Yes, I think so. The stars were out at Merriweather last night, so maybe they'll be. Do you like that?
Yeah, Alice. Good.
Let's get to Alice.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, thank you for
Alice.
Joining us.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. So Alice is the co-president. Mm-hmm. Let me just stop there for a second.
Yeah.
Sure.
What's up with that?
What is up with that?
My co-president is Betsy Grader, and for the most part, leagues usually like having co-presidents because there are sort of two halves to the league, the Ed Fund, which is the straight good government, civic engagement, voter registration part, and then the part that's advocacy and position. So making sure that you have different people, and if necessary, depending on the county, you have people to lead the sort of different wings. So for the most part, every local league tends to have a co-president.
Okay.
Well, that's a good
co-president of the League of Women Voters
of Howard County.
Yes.
You guys do great work.
Thank you very, very much. We're very proud of what we do here.
So, as we talked about, I'm very ignorant. I knew nothing about the League of Women Voters other than you hold great candidate forums.
Yes.
And provide great literature to help voters make informed decisions mm-hmm. about voting, which is awesome. But I did a little research, and I learned that the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan, mm-hmm. non-issue grassroots organization whose mission is to encourage the informed and active participation of citizens.
He's reading that. Can you
yes, he is.
And federal government, and to influence public policy through education and advocacy.
Correct.
And what struck me about that was that it is a gender-neutral, race-neutral, mm-hmm. Partisan, nonpartisan organization.
Galaxy-neutral.
Galaxy-neutral.
whose purpose is really to get people to make informed decisions about our elected officials, mm-hmm. about issues out there. Mm-hmm. Am I on track?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's exactly what
he's coming
doing.
With a zinger, though. You know,
yeah.
you get the setup there.
So.
I thought he was just going to spend this entire time
praising
us.
You...
Well, Alice, thank you for coming.
No, the zinger's coming. Here it comes.
Okay, so I get why you're called the League of Women Voters mm-hmm. from its origin.
Right. Okay. We were founded February 14th, 1920, by Carrie Chapman Catt, I can pronounce names, which was just 6 months before the 19th Amendment was ratified, and it was designed specifically to train the 50% of the population that suddenly found themselves with the right to vote and no real idea of how to go about campaigning, working on behalf of candidates running for office, participating in government. So it was specifically designed for that initially.
Okay. But today, mm-hmm. women have had the vote to write.
Vote.
See, there's mine.
I knew it was coming. Thank you.
Yep, for 92 years.
The right
years.
To vote for almost 100 years. Why are we still called the League of Women Voters?
I think part of it's branding and name recognition. We've built up a good reputation from that. There's... You, for the most part, a lot of people know what it is when they hear it, or at least know they're the people who put on the candidate forums and give me the voter's guide. I think it's got a good reputation in remembering that it was started for that purpose, that it advocated for people who couldn't speak for themselves. It was designed to help people who really didn't know how to go about helping themselves in this sort of process. So I think the name recognition ties to a history of supporting people.
Yeah, but there's lots of names like that. And, you know, mm-hmm. and then people have changed them over the years. As mm-hmm. you know, it's almost like the southern states taking the stars and bars out of their
right.
out of their state flags. You know, yeah, there was long history there, but they took them out because it. Now, if we had a League of...
Did you just compare us to the Confederacy?
I didn't compare you directly. I'm just going to legacy kind of things like a League of... I mean, what if we had a League of Men Voters? You know, there would be a backlash to change the name.
That's... there's actually...
That's
there's
not
a,
funny.
No, there's
Why are we laughing?
There's a trope on the internet of how to derail a conversation and bringing up things like that. Why isn't there a League of Women Men Voters? Why isn't there a League of White Voters? Is one of the common ways to ask a straw man argument. You know why there's not a League of Men Voters.
No, I know that, but I mean, it would seem by, you know, at some point.
Actually, I really don't.
Men are still the majority of voters. They're still the majority of elected officials. There's no real need to advocate to get people more involved in politics and engaged. We need to get women's rights and women's issues and women's voices out and heard. So the name recognition is also there to bring women into the political conversation, especially at a state and national level.
Did you know last month was the first month that Caucasians represented a minority of births?
Yeah, that's changing.
So we'll have this conversation again soon.
Well,
okay, so let me move on to your governing body.
Okay.
You are made up of co-presidents,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a board of directors.
Yes.
Do your bylaws require that your board of directors be made up exclusively of women?
No, it does not. And at the moment, yes, our board is exclusively of women.
Does your nominating committee make a concerted effort to bring gender diversity to the organization?
We need a few good men, you know?
Maybe that's
a problem.
Or is this a backlash dating back to 92 years?
They're still angry.
If you look at our membership, we don't have many male members to start with. And we've been fighting for more male members, and I spend a lot of time trying to convince men to join.
Thank you for the invitation, by the way.
Yes, thank
please
you.
Do join.
I know you've asked us.
I've tried. But we actually I was talking to Calvin Ball once and mentioning to him and somebody, I forget who else.
Is Calvin a member?
Calvin is a member.
All right, go Calvin.
As is Greg Fox.
Any other council members?
All the council members are members.
Oh, okay.
Not the county executive. But I was talking with Calvin, and I mentioned that he should come to something since he was a member. And the person who was with us was like, "Shut! Like, you're a member of the League of Women Voters?" And he was like, "Of course I am." So I think if you really know us, you know that it's a group you can be a part of. But I think for a lot of men,
I think there's a perception issue.
Yeah, and I think the name does hurt us in bringing more. I tried. I almost had a male member on my board. I was actually really fighting to convince two different men to join. One specifically to work in education, and one to work with us in communications. And both were, one was unable to join, and the other was sort of a little wary of the position.
Why don't you just Shanghai them like you were Shanghai?
I tried.
All right, so
I'm not quite as convincing as Jim Lankos.
So one more follow-up.
I understand that.
I think it's just one more follow-up, and I'm going to let
that's
go of
fine,
this.
That's fine, that's fine.
So you hung on to your name for 92 years because of the legacy.
Yeah.
Yet you're acknowledging that you're having difficulty with that name diversifying your membership. Is that at all on the radar from the perspective of, you know, maybe if we changed our name and gave the perception of being more open, then we would have more members? I never considered membership because of your name.
Yeah, you should join us. We can fill out a form right here.
I need a board seat first.
What's in a name?
We'd be happy to have you join the board.
You'd be sorry.
I think it's certainly on the radar, and it's certainly on the radar for me. I think it's not for some of our membership. A lot of states, a lot of local leagues are mostly concerned with kind of maintaining their current membership. Ours is really one of the few that's really been looking at rapidly expanding. And I think that's a lot due to me and to some of the other young people that we've brought on into the membership.
Can a local chapter change it?
No.
No.
Did you hear that? No.
No.
Oh, no.
We have a very strict sort of local to state to national. But actually, our national convention is in D.C. next week, and I'll be there. And I imagine a lot of what we'll be talking about is some of the perception issues. When I was first elected...
How big a convention is that? How many people will be in town?
I'm honestly not sure.
It's probably huge.
It is.
Yeah, I would imagine.
We only have it every other year as the national convention.
Is it made up of the boards, or is it made up of the memberships?
It's membership.
Well?
Each local league is allowed to send a certain number of delegates based on the number of members they have. And then the state sends their own delegation. The state has a convention as well. And when I first went to the state convention after election, I think every single other state president pulled me aside and was like, "How do we get more young people?" And so I imagine I'm going to get a lot more of those questions.
You're the token young person.
I was the token young person and apparently the elected voice for my generation or something.
Yeah. There's definitely a blue hair perception that the majority of members are the ones that started the organization 92 years ago.
So. Yes.
Exactly. Well, they've been around since
the founding.
Trouble.
You're going to be in trouble that way.
Won't be the first time.
It won't be the first time.
All right. So tell us, what do you guys do? How can people benefit from some of your programs, from the education that you provide, things like that?
Well, you mentioned some of what we do, and I think that's the stuff we're most known for, is the forums and the voter's guide. And we do candidate forums and a voter's guide for the primary for all elected positions in the county, and then again for the general election. We also advocate for different issues, mostly at the local level. We tend to testify before the county council on process issues. We want to make sure that you've set up a system by which the people can participate in legislation, can follow legislation, that its information is publicly available, that they have a means to be heard. So really most of our advocacy is on that. We do other informational sessions too, town halls. We did a after after Frank Turner's legislation regarding the Board of Education.
Yeah, the school board thing, huh?
We put together a forum for people who'd become interested in running for office. So we put together working with the Board of Elections and some previous candidates to try and explain what you might need to consider in order to run, what paperwork you'll need to file, what you'll need to look at. And we actually had a couple of our candidates, of the 14 candidates who ended up running, went to that session, and that's when they decided that they...
In the last primary.
Yeah.
Who were they? I want to see how good the seminar was.
Don't go there.
did any of them prevail?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So, but not all of them.
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Your voter guides, mm-hmm. do they actually talk about the actual candidates?
Yeah. You have clearly not read the voter's guide.
No, they do.
I have, but my reader, my listeners have not necessarily, so I'm trying to educate them.
Our listener.
The voter's guide do a kind of quick summary of each office, how many terms it is, how many positions, and a quick explanation of what the office actually entails, and then at least lists every single candidate, and then their answers to questions we submitted to them. And if they choose not to answer, we make a note of that. But every candidate is invited to participate, and they're given either a certain word limit or this time a character count limit, because we did it online, to answer the questions, and then we don't touch those at all, which means a lot of people...
Oh, so they're verbatim from the candidates.
Verbatim. So okay. We get a lot of people coming to me and telling me my grammar is terrible, which is not, in fact, true.
Now, what happens, though, if a candidate provides you more characters than is allowed in the...
Well, it used to be we'd just chop off at the end.
No matter what.
Yeah, we'd stop them mid-sentence.
That's a great way to do it.
Mid-sentence. It's a fair way to do it.
It is, right.
The only thing we've ever corrected is... websites, if they list their website, because we want to make sure that people can follow up
for more information.
So we'll double check those, but that's it. But this time, because it's online, it's an automatic character count, so it stops you.
Right, stops.
Which made it a lot easier for us. But then I had to explain to someone that spaces were characters, and so they had to...
Let me preface my next thing by saying I think your forums are great, and I think the league provides a great service for the voters of Howard County. But I've been to a couple, mm-hmm. and twice now I've been admonished by a league member for taking pictures.
Because the forum and the productions we do are the property of the league, and we've actually run into at the national level, and I believe once at the state level, a candidate taking our materials and editing them and then using them.
We went to Meriwether last night, and I videoed two songs of the Brown Band.
Yeah.
But
what else?
But
what other reason you got?
But they nevertheless, they have a stance against you doing. Most people would have a stance against you doing that, but it's really hard to police in a small room. It's a little easier to police. So we've just our. At the state level, we made a decision that you can't record outside. We allow, actually, Patch or news agencies to come in and record. So we might be able to make an argument that blogs should be able to do it as well. But for the most part, we try... And we allow for personal use. We had a couple candidates filming so that they could do kind of preparation and go over the speeches and go over
But I've always kind of wondered how you pull that up. Because the forums, both forums I attended where I was told not to take pictures, were public rooms. I mean, one was at Howard Community College, and the other was in the boardroom at the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
That ordinarily, any other event there, I can take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a league event.
Yes.
Do they ever get in and say, well, you're on public property, I should be able to?
Not that I've run into, but it's certainly an argument somebody can make.
Okay. It's just a minor thing, but I always just wondered why that was.
Do you endorse candidates?
We do not.
Okay.
No candidates. We actually, we try not to name candidates in anything really we do. Or parties. We try and just do broad, general information.
Okay.
I'd like to, before we get, towards the end here, but I'd like to know, I made joke of the token young person, but, they're... You can count on your hands, on two hands, the number of people your age that you see in local, involved local events. Tom Cole, Chris Oxenham, Ian Kennedy,
Dennis Lane.
I'm in the white-haired group. What do you think, what will it take to kind of engage more young people into this process?
Sure. I mean, part of it is, I think in a lot of those cases, we're kids who grew up thinking this was an interesting thing. We liked it already. Yeah. So it's kind of...
You're involved in student government.
Yeah.
My parents were involved in politics.
Yeah. I was at 17, I was on the Boundary Lines Adjustment Committee for Reservoir High School. I mean,
really?
I've always been... Yeah. I was the student member of that. I've always done this kind of thing. But I think I've been reading a lot about... people referring to this as like the Harry Potter generation is a term I've heard, where in a lot of our literature and what we're seeing is people being chosen and people my age kind of waiting to be chosen. We're not good at taking that sort of initiative. So I think a lot of it is somebody identifying, you can do this. You would be good at this task.
And much like your mother chose you.
No, it's more Joan Lankos.
Oh, Joan Lankos. I'm sorry. You're right.
And then Grace Kubofsek really sitting there and talking me through and saying, you know, what are you interested in? What do you like? You know what? It sounds like you'd be really good at that. And by the time she'd finished that spiel, I was kind of like, yeah, I would be great at that. Yeah,
and Joan is very persuasive, we know.
I could do that.
Yeah. I could so do that.
Why am I not doing that already?
And does it, are you happy you did? I mean.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that I did it.
What's been the greatest benefit to you personally by doing this? I mean, what?
I don't know anything in particular. I like explaining things. I like talking to people through issues and concepts. And so this is a way to explain really how their government works, how they get involved. I've liked that I get to work now with a couple other young people I've brought in. I'm actually, for the first time, I'm not the youngest person on my board. My secretary is actually 2 years younger than me, which is very, very exciting.
Very cool.
So bringing in other people and really getting to explain how it works and seeing somebody learn something new and get involved and care more.
And by being involved, you've got to meet interesting people like Paul and I.
Exactly. Sorry, you're right. I thought that would be overselling it, but yes, this is the greatest benefit to me personally.
The league is very lucky to have you, and you're incredibly articulate, and I think you represent them very well. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Maybe we can have you back on closer to the election.
That'd be great. Share
some more information
with us. Maybe we'll get around on one of these panels, too.
We should have a bunch of new projects and stuff coming up to the general, so we should have more chances to get to know the candidates and some different video work and some other stuff like that. So we're trying some new things.
It'll be a challenge, because school board is not usually something people pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah, so this is one of those times. And we're also going to try and do some crowdsourcing or polling to get people help submit more questions to us for those forums.
Excellent.
If someone wants to learn more about the League of Women Voters, how can they reach you?
Howard.lwvmd.org, or just look us up online. You can find us pretty easily. And we've got a Facebook page. We've got Twitter. We're trying to do a bunch of different ways to engage with the county.
Great.
Alice, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right, why don't we take a minute now and thank our sponsor,
which I forgot to do earlier, which I'm not firing on all cylinders today.
Quite all right.
But we did like to thank our sponsor because they helped make this show possible, and that's the Columbia Association. And the Columbia Association would like you to know about this weekend is the Columbia Home Tour, Sunday from 11 to 5. For $20 per person, you can visit, I think there's 5 homes. There's actually an article in the flyer this week, Explore Howard, online, about they have a couple of the different houses highlighted. Our guest on the last show, Rich Mazzell and his wife Melinda, their condo at Watermark is one of the places on the home tour, as well as a River Hill blogger and dentist. The blogging dentist, Dr. Trevor Green, is also, his townhouse in River Hill is one of the stops. But you're reading the story, there's a lot of interesting things going on. So anyway, it's all for a good cause. There's a reception all throughout the day because it's a self-directed tour. So as you go in and out of the houses, you can stop at Claret Hall in the village of River Hill to this reception and meet other people who've been going around to the houses. And all the monies go to benefit Bridges to Housing Stability. If you need information, call CA at 410-730-3987 or visit their website.
And now we have a little special treat. We're going to mix things up a little bit. Many of our listeners have probably heard of the book, 50 Shades of Grey. There's been a little bit of a controversy that's been brewing in the local library systems.
That other H county.
I know. Around the state, as to whether this book should be permitted to be checked out of the library or not. And Harford County this week came out and said, we're not doing it.
You know, Harford County's kind of the anti-Howard County.
The bizarro.
I can't speak to that, whether that's true or not, but the lady that was interviewed, and I heard the interview, she basically said, we have a policy against porn, and we believe that 50 Shades of Grey is a version of soft porn, and we are not going to allow it. Now, Howard County still has, it's still on their list. In fact, they've got some upwards of 1,000 requests pending right now for the book. They only have 100 copies
100
available.
Copies over 6 branches,
right.
Yeah.
So we are, as you know, at the mall, and we are going to walk around a little bit and see if we can ask some folks here how they feel about 50 Shades of Grey and whether it should be a permitted library book at the Howard County Library System. So stay tuned.
So are you reading the book, 50 Shades of Grey?
Yes, I am.
And you're how far through it?
About 75%.
The big question, does it belong in the public libraries?
I personally don't think so. It needs to be in a special section in the public library, maybe.
Adults only section?
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
Yes.
And have you finished it?
Yes.
So there's a little bit of controversy out there as to whether the book belongs in public libraries. What do you think?
I think public libraries should carry it. It's a great book. It has a great plot. And it's fun to read.
So, 50 Shades of Grey, have you read it?
I have not.
Do you plan to?
No.
And does it belong in the libraries?
Absolutely. There's no book, really, that doesn't belong in the library. It's
a adults-only section?
There shouldn't be an adults-only section. There's no adults-only section in the DVDs, in the books already. And there are certainly other books and movies and television shows that have graphic descriptions of violence and sex.
So have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
I have not, but I'm interested in reading it.
It's on the bucket list, huh?
Absolutely.
So there's a little bit of controversy brewing as to whether the book belongs in public libraries. What do you think?
I'm kind of a big advocate for any type of literary piece being in public libraries. I mean, there's always some form of education to it, and so I'm perfectly okay with, you know, it being in any type of public library or any forum for that matter.
And should it be in an adult-only section?
Let's keep it there, and let's see how it goes with that, and then, you know, from that, I guess, reaction. Yeah, I do.
So have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
I have not, but I have heard of it.
So you know what it's about?
Not quite. My friend was telling me about it briefly.
She said you gotta read it, right?
Yeah, everybody was talking about it and how you should read it.
So do you think it belongs in public libraries?
I think it should belong in a public library for everyone to be able to access it. Now, if it's not right for children, then they should take it out of the children's area and put it in, like, the adult area. Just like they do with any other book with high sexual content in it. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.